So we are in a series now in our second part of a 10-week series, actually. Under the umbrella of the Season for Nonviolence that we are honoring is this series called Many Paths to the One. And each week we are focused on one of the faith traditions or several within one, different ways that we are looking at joining together and understanding, expanding our understanding, and spreading peace through greater understanding of one another's faiths. And you might be surprised at some of the ways that you share ideals and practices and values of faiths that maybe you didn't know about. So today, as we talk about the earth, it's really the holiness of everything. I think of that, one of my favorite songs by Peter Meyer, Everything is Holy Now. In it, he tells a story of when he was a boy in Catholic school, and he thought, you know, basically that was holiness, was when he was just at church, and then it sort of spread out, and now he realizes everything is holy now. And it's that awakening, that recognition that everything in everyday life has a sacredness in it, even in the seemingly mundane, that our bodies are a part of that sacredness. In fact, our bodies are very much the earth. And so how we treat our body is how we treat the earth, and how we treat the earth as we treat our bodies, all one and the same. We are made of that water. We are made of that earth. We are made of that air and that fire. And so this journey is really encompassing anything that might fall under the idea of earth-based, which is a big umbrella, and I'm only going to touch on a few aspects of that today. But I think if there's any faith tradition for our times, it would be the ones that belong to this kind of earth-based, nature-loving, as Trey always says, she's not here now, but I think I can safely say it. She always introduces herself as a tree-hugging dirt worshiper. And a unitic, of course. And so it's that kind of recognition that everything is holy, once again. And I think it is this type of tradition, if none other, that we need the most right now, right? To care for our earth, to address the issues around climate change, and to really turn things around as we can, working together in collaboration. And it's up to traditions like ours in Unity, who are open-minded, who are welcoming, to really listen and educate ourselves and reach across, you know, to join together, to join hands, and to really make a difference in our world. We can do this, and it takes the knowledge and the wisdom from each other's traditions, the practices from each other's traditions, to really allow us to work together in an effective way to address the challenges that are before us. So we are allies in the eco-spirituality, the awakening, the worldwide awakening to eco-spirituality. And is that often it is the spiritual path, sometimes that causes the problems, but that also holds the solutions, you know, the religions of the world and the faith traditions and the wisdom traditions of the world. So today my intent is also to debunk some myths that we might still be holding, and to allow us to learn a little bit more and to expand our understanding, to widen our borders, or maybe even erase them completely. We'll see where we go. The primal faiths is often the way that some of the earth-based different traditions are named. Houston Smith talks about it in that way in his book, The World Religions, that we're using as a reference in our class. And in that, he talks about primal as, it's called primal because it's first. It's those who came first, very much like we might call indigenous folks First Nations people. So it's those who were here at the beginning, the religions and the peoples and the traditions that came first. And it is, he names three characteristics that really are across all these different primal religions are in common. One is that the traditions are oral traditions. So the many religions we know of today, like Christianity and Judaism and Islam, are all literature-based, really, scripture-based. So it's the scripture that informs the religion. In this case, the religions will influence the literature and the art and so on, but it's mostly an oral tradition, not a written one. And so it's that oral art of storytelling that is a big part of what keeps alive the teachings and the ideals and the hearts engaged in whatever it is that wants to be shared. One such example is a story called The Salt Child. And it comes from a book called Soul Food, actually, that Tyler gifted me with. It's by Jack Kornfield and Christina Feldman. And they work together to pull together different stories from all around the world, different faith traditions. This one is called a traditional story. In the Salt Child story, there is a young boy, and he's made of salt. And he wants to know who he is. And so he travels all over the earth, to all the ends of the earth. He goes up into the mountains, and he goes deep into the forest. He goes all over, and he can't seem to really get this idea of, who really am I? And so he asks, and he walks, and he intends, and he travels, and he meets other people, and he goes all to the ends of the earth. But he hasn't yet, until this one day, come to the edge of the ocean. If you remember the first time you saw the ocean, you might feel a little bit like the salt child did. Wow. The vastness, the beauty, the pull, the smell, the crashing sound of the waves, all of that is a part of that just wonderful experience of being there for the first time. And when the salt child saw the ocean, he cried out with joy, and he moved closer to it, and he dipped a toe in the water. Like many of us might dare to do in San Francisco, right? And the ocean beckoned him in further. Don't be afraid, come in further. And so he began to walk further into the ocean, and the further he walked, he dissolved. And he said, now I know who I am. And so it is for us that we return home again and again upon the earth. When we go to those high places and we see as God sees the bigger picture, when we go to the ocean and we feel the Mother Ocean, that rhythmic idea of Mother Ocean who carries us or who sometimes fiercely crashes against the earth, against the shore. And so however it is that we might experience the standing talls, as the indigenous people would call the trees, and that comes from indigenous means native, and so those religions that have that idea of ancestors is so important. Ancestry and veneration of the ancestors is absolutely key. Even the plants, the animals, the trees, the rocks, all have a spirit in them called animism, which is something that idea is shared across many of these earth-based religions, probably common to all of them. So all of that is a part of it. So this first idea of oral is part of primal religions. And then the second thing that Houston Smith points out is the idea of time. That time is not linear like most of us, you know, operate on this idea of chronos time and linear time, but it's actually more, it's more of a felt eternal now. It's, as the Aboriginals would say, ever when. And the ever when is the constant now, right? So the constant now. And so we live in that sense of eternity. And at the same time, we can go back to the ancestors that are so revered because it gets us closer to the source. That's the idea why ancestors are so revered, because if they came before us, then they're closer to the source is the belief. And so there is a belief that holds them up as closer to that divinity, as knowing more or remembering more from that divinity. There's an old story of black elk playing on all fours as he got to be an older man. He was a Sioux chief, a very well-known Sioux chief, and he would play with his grandchildren on the floor, and he would say, "We are getting very close. I am returning to the place from which you have come." And so it's that kind of reverence for life. Time is not linear, it's cyclical. It's based on the natural rhythms of Earth, the pull of the tides that shift the moon. It's based on how the sun and how the Earth moves around the sun. It's based on the rhythms of the seasons and the cycles and the circles. And we all know that when we pay close attention to our own rhythms, that we take better care of ourselves, that we feel more in the flow. Anybody notice that? When you are tired and you sleep, you feel refreshed. When you are hungry and you eat, you feel fulfilled. And yet so often we create a different kind of society that pushes away those natural rhythms and cycles. So very much the earth-based religions helps us come into that flow, come into that natural rhythm. One of the primal religions that Houston Smith talks about as really the existing one on planet Earth now that is really still very pure from that first people's time is the Aboriginal people in Australia, because they never had that Neolithic period of tools and farming techniques introduced. And so it's always remained in this very pure state. And right now, while Australia is burning, it is the Aboriginal people and their practices with fire that are finally, in 2020, being listened to when it comes to this, right? And so this is Violet Lawson. She's an Aboriginal woman who her family regularly does these very intentional burns, and they know how to work with fire. They say fire is not necessarily to be feared. Fire is an element to be revered, to be respected, and you fight fire with fire. You prevent fire, you work with fire in a way that is working with the landscape. So now scientists and local authorities are beginning to pay more attention to the ways of Aboriginals that have always been. And that has effects for us too, even in California, to listen to those very close to the earth ways of being. So he says about oral tradition and the eternity of time, and then the third thing he points out that all primal religions share is a sense of place. So it's not just space, but place, that place is sacred. Like the Mount Diablo is sacred to the Ohlone people in this area. Place is a really sacred place of ceremony. It's a place of reverence. It matters. And when we care about place, we pay a lot of attention to the detail of place, to the markings on the tree, to the rhythms of the changing leaves, to the growth of the plant, to the animals around us, to all of that. We pay attention to place. So those are some of the key things that come from these religions. All of them tend to share a reverence and a practice of art, of sacred art, of symbolism being really important. As the Aboriginals talk about dream time and shamanic journeying, all of these can be a part of the earth-based religions. There's another religion that falls under this umbrella that's called pagan or paganism. And I wonder what you think in your mind when you hear the word pagan. Curious, if anybody wants to share. Christmas. Okay. Anybody else? Yeah. Witchcraft. Okay, and there was something over there. Botchery. Uh-huh. Debauchery. Okay. Seasons. Okay. Anything else? Yeah. Affirmation of life. 13-month calendar. Magic. Primitive. Okay, great. These are some really good words. Some people will say non-believer, non-Christian, right? Because you've heard that very successful public education political smear campaign. And you know where it comes from is that the root of pagan is a Latin word, root, and all it means is villager or rustic or civilian. But at the time that Christianity wanted soldiers for the cause, soldiers for Christ, they divided themselves up between the incompetent soldiers, i.e. the pagans, and the soldiers who were really willing to go to war for the religion and the spread of the religion. So it's from those very early beginnings that these ideas come, and then they get so widespread that we might not even think about it, right? So there's a lot that we can do to educate ourselves to be more welcoming. So do you know what the fastest growing religion is in America? Paganism. I don't know. I heard a lot of different things, but I did hear paganism, and that's it. By far and away, the largest growing religion in America. And a lot of young people, a lot of millennials are really drawn to it. And it can't be divorced from the care that we have for the environment. So it's the coming together of the care for our world, the care for our Mother Earth, the care for our future that these spiritual practices and ideas are being infused. So I was educating myself yesterday on neo-paganism. Neo-paganism is just a term used for paganism being revived and adopted and adapted for modern times. And I read through all these ideals and precepts of neo-paganism, and I aligned with every single one of them, completely resonated. And I sort of had an aha, jaw-dropping moment. I think I'm a neo-pagan. Wow. Just figured it out yesterday. So I know we have a lot to learn. I know we have a lot to open up to together on this journey. When I was on retreat in November, the Spirit gave me this word to be my intention for the retreat. It was a silent retreat, and the word was enchantment. And this has been the quote that I've had on my email ever since by Thomas More. The soul has an absolute, unforgiving need for regular excursions into enchantment. It requires them like the body needs food and like the mind needs thought. Enchantment. Enchantment and re-enchantment with our world, with each other, with all that we are as human divine beings is really something that is called for and that can really shift the tide for us, if you will. So one can be a Christian and a pagan, a Hindu and a pagan, a Jew and a pagan, a Muslim and a pagan, or all of these things. We can be all of these things. They are not mutually exclusive. So one of the things that somebody said was witches is what they think of when you think of pagans. So you might say, well, I can get with all of that except this one, you know. That part, boy, what do we think of witches? We think of, you know, ugly Halloween, you know, scary, green-faced, usually female images, right? With a mean little, you know, cruel cackle and I used to try to scare my sister, you know, like, you know, it was sort of like scary little cackle in the night, you know. It's that kind of sense, though, that we have, right, of what a witch is. And, of course, we know that the history is that witches, mostly with good intentions, were healers and wise women that were being completely oppressed, persecuted, and even widely burned at the stake. And so today, finally, in 2020, maybe we'll awaken that might not be the case. That witches are evil, that witches are bad, that witches are ugly. In fact, they are good. They are healers. They are here to be a part of the harmonizing and the healing of our planet. And did you know that we have one amongst us? She is certainly a good witch. I welcome forward Michelle Ciccala.
Good morning.
Good morning. She's got it. So you may remember a year ago in the fall, 2018, we always do a fall book study and have small group studies and a series that we do. And we were doing the book, The Wizard of Us by Jean Houston, which was based, of course, on The Wizard of Oz. And we had many skits along the way in that. And for some reason, I had this really clear guidance, having no idea, to ask Michelle if she would play the good witch, Glinda. So Goddess knew what she was doing, right? Because
yes.
It turns out it was more true to who you are than I would have ever known until now.
So I am Glinda.
You yes. are Glinda. You are, absolutely. And she just smiled all the way through it. And I said, you just seem like the right person for this. She said, I am. So tell us a little bit about your path. I know you're magical, so you can probably tell us in about 2 minutes.
Yes. Well, let me just say I'm honored to be here and share a little bit about my story. I was born in Anchorage, Alaska, and I lived in the Alaskan wilderness way out in the middle of nowhere until I was 5 in a log cabin that my dad built with no electricity and no running water. Until I was 5 years old. I'm sure you can all relate.
Yeah. Yeah.
I remember being a little kid and just going out into the forest, into the mountains, and playing, and just knowing that there was magic there, just knowing that there were fairies and elves and like spirits of the forest and just feeling the magic of being in nature. And that's been with me my whole life. And later on, we lived in Colorado, and my dad had a used bookstore. And I didn't grow up going to church or anything like that, but my sister and I just ravaged the occult section of his bookstore. Like, the shelf was empty at all times. So we read about chakras, we read about angels, and we read about witchcraft. And when I read about witchcraft and paganism, it just hit home for me. It just was like, ah, oh, this is it. And then as I got a little older into my teens, I tried to take a couple psychedelic spiritual shortcuts. <You know? laughs> Yeah. I tried to expand my consciousness the easy way. Unfortunately, it didn't end well for me and led me to addiction, and a horrible addiction. And when I hit bottom, when I was 25, I got into recovery. And so in recovery, I started on my spiritual path again, and I started to meditate and go to drum circles, and I became a Reiki healer, and I found Unity. And I remember the first time I came to Unity, it was in Florida, Unity of Delray Beach. My husband and I were sitting there. He was my boyfriend at the time. We were sitting there, and I heard that language, Mother, Father, God, and it just melted my heart. It was just the most healing thing for me. And then at the end of the service, Reverend Nancy Norman, she said, may the God of your heart, may the God of your understanding bless you throughout your week. And we just looked at each other and we were like, did she just say of our understanding? Like, that was just, it was amazing. And we just fell in love with that community. And I'd never had community like that before. So we became members. We got married there. We had our daughter blessed there. And when we moved to California, we were so grateful to find Unity of Walnut Creek right down the street. And so I've been able to be a part of a community here and have my kids as part of the community that I never had, that's open and inclusive, and then at the same time follow my own path as a witch. And a few years ago, I decided I wanted to, you know, I'd been working by myself. I wanted to meet other people who felt the same as me. And I found the reclaiming tradition, which is out of San Francisco and was started in the 1970s by a woman named Starhawk. Has anyone ever heard of Starhawk? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Lots Yay. Of people.
Yeah, so it's the idea that if the earth is sacred and the water is sacred and the air is sacred, that we take it a step further. We're willing to be activists on behalf of the earth, right? And so... Yeah, so since then I've become a priestess in the reclaiming tradition. I'm a proud witch, and I'm also the Unity Youth Director. Yeah, and they all just kind of go so well together.
How do they go well together? Can you give us an example?
Sure. Well, I mean, it's very affirmative, right? Unity is so affirmative. And that's what, when we're, as a witch, as a priestess, when I said it, when I'm creating a ritual, I start with the intention. What is the intention for this working? You know, one of my favorite rituals we did last spring was called Seed Bombs for Justice. And we had people write down these things, you know, that were bothering them, think they or bring newspapers with headlines, and then we took it and we ripped it up, and then we created these seed bombs, and then you know with wildflower seeds, and then we planted them in our garden, seed bombs for justice. And wow. It's the idea that of being able to be co-creators with our reality, just like we believe here at Unity.
Yeah, and you bring up, I think as you're talking, Michelle, I'm thinking about activism, you know, yeah. And you mentioned it a few minutes ago. So, the idea that you can be out there on the front lines as an activist, you can be doing spiritual ritual, you can be holding prayer, you can be offering a community, a sanctuary like ours for people to rest and refill and recalibrate. So is there anything more you want to say about those two things coming together, both your spiritual tradition and path, and then, you know, some things that you may do as an environmental activist?
Sure. Yeah. So as activists, the life, like an activist usually burns out within 3 years because there's just so much going on, and there's just so much going on, and we need to be supported spiritually. We need to be fed. And that's why I love reclaiming, is that we come together to create rituals to heal ourselves, to heal the earth, and to support each other in our activism together and apart. And that's another thing that, you know, that unity does too, is really feeds us so that we can go out into the world and do the work that we need to do.
Yeah, absolutely. Can you give us an example of something that we might do, that we maybe could all do? We could even do today or tomorrow morning.
Sure. Yeah, so one of my favorite magic potions is coffee. Yeah. So I start my day with this ritual, and I'll invite you to maybe try it tomorrow. So I stand at my coffee pot, and then I put in the grounds. And I say, thank you, Mother Earth. And then I put in the water, and I say, water is life. Water is sacred. And then I fire that sucker up, and I say, thank you, fire. Thank you, electricity, for making this coffee pot go. And then while it's brewing, I maybe take some breaths and try to center myself for the day. And then I pour my coffee, my magic potion, into my cup that's going to energize me and awaken my spirit. And I stir in some love, and I take a big drink, and I say, blessed be.
I'll come up with the tea version of that for the tea drinkers a little bit later.
Decaf works, yeah. But it's little things like that. It's about intention. It's about living with intention. You know, making your eggs in the morning and maybe taking the eggshells out and putting them in the garden as an offering to Mother Earth for feeding us, and we feeding her, you know. And just little things like that, sweeping the floor before my friends come over and really clearing out that energy. Yeah, we use brooms, right? Yeah. little things that we can do with intention, with mindfulness. Remembering to bring our grocery bags to the grocery store is is a magical thing, right?
Yeah. And honoring it as a magical thing.
And honoring
that's the key.
That's the key, isn't it?
Intention,
yes.
Yeah, beautiful. There's so much we can do, and you've given us a lot of good ideas in a short time.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for sharing your path with us. Mm-hmm. So I know that, we're going to go get some children. We just got carried away here as we're chatting, so we could talk about more.
Well, I just want to talk a little bit more about activism and ways that we are activists. I think that to have hope today is an act of activism. And when we come together like we are right now, and we, you know, put the stigma aside and we really have conversations, whenever we see divisiveness and we decide to have a conversation about it instead of going with our old bias or anything like that, is an act of activism. And so I think that we're all activists here. Anytime that we're inclusive, tolerant, we are being activists. And I think especially with these, I feel like an activist every Sunday when I come in and work with these kids and teach them reverence for the earth and affirmative prayer, and just to be tolerant and inclusive is an act of activism, sacred activism. Mm,
so. Very much so.
Yeah.
Well, I think ritual is such a key part of obviously what you do, and you shared a little bit with us. Are the rituals usually organically created, or are they rituals you've done over and over? Your coven, which is your group of, you want to say a little bit about your coven?
Sure. So I'm bi-covenal. I have a new moon coven and a full moon coven. Both have very different energies. And what it is a small group of women. It doesn't have to necessarily be women, but mine is. And we meet in our living rooms, and we share about our month, and we support each other in each other's healing. And it's really wonderful to work with a group of women who I've known for a long time, and they can say things like, you know, Michelle, you know, last December you kind of went through something like that. Do you think this might have to do with, you know, we are mirrors for each other. And so just to work together with a group of powerful, wise women on a monthly basis is a gift and a blessing and something that I've longed for a very long time.